City of Indian Wells.
Present.
City of Cathedral City.
Present.
City.
Here.
City of La Quinta.
Present.
City of Blythe. County
Over there.
County of Riverside District 4.
Here.
City of Ranch Mirage.
Here.
City of Desert Hot Spring.
Present.
Chair, we have 4.
Thank you very much. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Supervisor, would you
please? Please join me in saluting our nation's flag.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Any modifications to the agenda?
None.
Thank you. And do we have any public comments on agenda items?
Chair, we do not.
Thank you very much. If anybody in the public did not get a chance to fill out a card or talk to the clerk, would you like to speak on any items on the agenda? So nobody coming forth. We'll go to item 6, Chair and Executive Director's announcements. I have none. Do you have any?
Yeah, I do. Just one is a reminder, our attorney with BB&K does participate in these meetings, and they do so via Zoom. It's usually Mike Jenkins, but it is Nick Norvell tonight. If you do have legal questions, we could turn to him for an answer. Another housekeeping matter, you might see a second set of microphones on the table. Those are really for the Zoom audio, and hopefully they work a little bit better. If you've ever listened to our meetings on Zoom, you'll note that the audio is a little bit spotty, so this will hopefully improve that. Those that are paying attention to us online. And additionally, just to remind everybody here, we are in the midst of looking for more money for Indian Canyon. We are putting an application into the Southern California Association of Governments in about a month's time. And even the last few days of closures remind us how important this link is in our community. Of course, it wasn't just Indian Canyon that was closed. It was a couple of other access points in and out of Palm Springs. Lastly, you did get a report at your last executive committee meeting on a grant opportunity with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. It's a nationwide grant opportunity where we are paired with our partners in Riverside County and San Bernardino County. We're going after $200 million. I have no idea what our prospects are. This is a nationwide opportunity with likely the results given to us just before the election. I'm sure it's not a coincidence. And that $200 million, we are going to be seeking a lot of money for electric vehicle charging stations, a lot of money for improving public buildings, and a lot of money for low-income housing. I think that's particularly important in the Coachella Valley, where utility bills are such a drain on folks' expenses here. So. More on that. We may not hear much more again for a few months, and hopefully we'll get a good word come October. That's the extent of my report.
Thank you, sir. We're going to move to the consent calendar. Does anyone want to pull any items off the consent?
Move approval of consent, La Quinta.
Second the motion, Indian Wells. The motion by La Quinta, second by Indian Wells. Any other discussion? Roll call, please. Oh, wait, can I call this one?
Yeah.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Joey?
You're waving affirmatively, I think.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Item passes. Item 8 is discussion and action. There was no items pulled from the consent calendar, so we'll move to item 8. Discussion and action. Item A is the recognition of the 2024 used oil recycling poster contest winners.
Yay.
Emily. You're going to announce the winners. We've got a little nice surprise for them. And then we are going to all take a photo at the end.
We are.
We're going to have them come up, stand here. We'll all gather around.
Nice.
Get yourselves prepped. Okay, so our used oil recycling events are officially back, and we're kicking it off by recognizing our art contest winners. CVAG, along with the cities of La Quinta and Coachella, have put together some bags. Okay, unfortunately, our second place winner, Ruben from Palm Desert, was not able to make it tonight. This was his entry. Did a wonderful job.
Our third place winner is Andrew from Indio. So Andrew, if you want to come up.
Last year as well, didn't she?
Yes.
Yes.
So, this is the used foil event poster that you'll see. These are the images that you'll see. So thank you, Antonio.
Okay.
Is this our other one?
Oh, just in time.
Ruben.
Come on in.
Hi.
These are all for you. Antonio, Ruben, and Andrew will be recognized at our first official event, which is taking place in Coachella this Saturday, and we have another prize for each of you.
Wow.
So thank you to the City of Cathedral City for generously donating these things.
Wow, wonderful.
Contest winners to come into the middle here, and if we can all try to take a group photo.
Perfect.
Come on in.
Oh, all the way to the table.
Come on, you. Yeah. Stand by us over here. These guys don't fight it. Yes. We can't even reach you from this side.
Ted might, but the rest of us no.
Parents,
if you want to come in, go ahead. Look over there. All right, 3, 2, 1.
Okay, looks great.
Thank you.
Very good.
Congratulations. Congratulations to all of you. You don't want to hang out. You don't have to.
You can do a
senior's
poster contest, Ted.
We're going to move to item B, which is CVAG's audit for fiscal year 22-23 and related reports. Slide. Clark.
Thank you, Chair Mattis. Nice to see everyone, and we actually have the privilege of presenting this item to Mayor Pro Tem Weil and the rest of the finance committee that was present at our meeting last week to go over these results. And before I hand it over to Shannon, our audit partner from Davis Farr, just wanted to note that CVAG had a really great year. And to me, as an accountant, I don't get to go out in the streets and wear the hard hat that John puts on in transportation, but if we do get to count those dollars on the books, and CVAG's net position did increase by quite a bit this year, 45%, and that's really representative of all that work in your communities with the CV Sync and Link projects, particularly that are in-house here now. So I just wanted to mention that highlight from my end, and then I'll pass it over to Shannon Davis Farr, who will tell us about the clean opinion she gave us.
Thank you, Claude. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. As Claude mentioned, I am here to report on the audit results for the fiscal year ending June 30, 2023. And hold on, I'm trying to advance. Oh, here we go. As he mentioned, we did issue that unmodified opinion dated January 30th, 2024, which is also known as the clean audit opinion and is the highest level of opinion that can be received. It indicates that the financial statements and footnotes are presented fairly and in all material respects with generally accepted accounting principles. We did also have an emphasis of matter paragraph related to the implementation of new accounting standards, and our audit opinion is not modified with respect to this matter. We had the communication to those in governance letter, which is the end of audit letter, essentially indicates if there are any disagreements with management, which there are none, any journal entries, significant estimates, or important disclosures to note. And then we also issued the government auditing standards opinion, which is also known as the internal control letter, and the single audit report. Happy to note that there were no audit adjustments detected as a result of our audit procedures. We didn't have any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses noted in internal control, and the finance staff was very well prepared for the audit. A couple significant audit areas that we did have were the implementation of GASB 87 in relation to leases. This was a new accounting standard implemented last year, but didn't affect the financial statements last year for CBAG, but it did this year due to the new office space that you're in. This essentially resulted in a $1.5 million asset and liability being recorded on the financial statements. And then we also had the implementation of GASB 96 this year, which is a little similar to GASB 87. However, it is specific to subscription-based information technology agreements. And that was for the budget software. And that resulted in about a $60,000 asset and liability to the financial statements. Doesn't really affect the income statement or statement of activities, but just really the balance sheet. And with that, I can answer any questions that anyone may have of the audit process, the audit results, or anything else related to the audit.
Claude, anything else to add?
Not from my end, Chair.
Thank you. Any questions?
All right.
I don't see anybody raising their hand.
No, I'll move to approve. We're just doing file, right?
This is receiving file.
Receiving file?
Yeah.
We can still make that motion, and it's part of the Finance Committee, so we've been through this a couple times, and really happy to
May we receive file and applaud?
Absolutely. Applaud the team have done a yeoman's job.
Well, I do have a motion and a second. All those in favor to receive and file?
Aye.
Any opposed, Joey?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move to item C, which is a regional collaboration to address homelessness in the Coachella Valley. Erica.
Chair, thank you. I'll be brief and really turning this over to the supervisor. This item here, we're combining two items that went to your colleagues on the Homelessness Committee. The first is a summary of the Homelessness Symposium, which the supervisor and Greg will discuss here in a minute. And then staff will discuss our quarterly report and provide you a few highlights. With that, Supervisor?
Sure. Thank you, Erica, Ms. Chair, and colleagues. And I'll try to be brief as well and turn it over to our good friend Greg. But with that said, I think it's amazing how far we've come in the last few years with the issue of homelessness. I remember when I first came on board in 2017, being appointed by the governor and learning, I think it was probably like my second day on the job, potentially within the first week, that Roy's was either going to close down or change, or there's going to be a major shift, a transition, not knowing what was going to happen. And so, since then, I think we've made some major inroads. And as you know, Roy's Desert Resource Center has been repurposed where it also helps folks with behavioral health concerns and challenges. And it also provides housing first for folks out there, or throughout the region for that matter. On February 1st, beginning of this month, we had our first symposium for the County of Riverside. We were the first so far. The other four districts are going to have a symposium as well to take a look as to how well they're doing when it comes to the issue of homelessness in their districts. And it was hosted with the Coachella Rescue Mission. And I'll tell you, there was over 100 participants there. It was packed. Obviously, this is a concern to many people, has been for quite some time. And everyone gave great presentations and really highlighted many of what your cities are doing. You know, not to brag, but I don't think other districts will compare anywhere near to what we got going on. I think Greg can attest to that, and he'll speak to that in a bit as well. And as you know, this year we decided not to do the point in time count and we opted out of it. Folks had that option. We decided to do it every 2 years, and the reason for that is because this year we decided to do, if you will, like an update, a briefing, giving you the stats, the data, the numbers, how far we've come in the present over the years, and then as well since last year. Now, as far as presenters are concerned, obviously we had Greg Rodriguez, and we had folks from Behavioral Health. We had Housing and Workforce Solutions speak. Tanya Torno, who's a Torno, who's the deputy director. Let me just give you some tidbits here of information that she provided. Tanya reported out in the last year, there were 5,000 individuals assisted by agencies in our continuum of care. This is up from 4,100 in 2021-2022 and 3,600 in 2020-2021. The county was able to connect one out of three of them into housing as well. And there is also an 86% success rate across programs in terms of clients maintaining their housing. So bottom line, the message is that housing works. In the 4th District alone, we are looking at a 25% increase in shelter bed expansion. And there are also 1,600 affordable homes under construction in the Coachella Valley at this time. Aside from the fact that we now also have an information system, management system, known as the Homelessness Management Information System, that continues to count and track our unhoused residents on a daily basis. I also want to report out that we do have teams throughout the region, throughout the county, throughout the 4th, of behavioral health immediate crisis response teams. And in particular in Blythe, that was a major concern that kept coming up by the mayor and the council members and different groups out there, business folks, talking about the concerns they had with homelessness. And we still continue to do that. Obviously, Tom was there, and he provided an overview of what CVAG is doing, and which I guess you'll hear a little bit later, to their update. And let me just say thank you to the City of Palm Springs, Jay Verrata, Flynn Fagg, talked about the Navigation Center, and it will have 55 congregate shelter-like beds and 80 modulars, and I'll let Greg speak to that in a bit. We also had the City of Desert Hot Springs. Thank you to Doria Wilms and Noe Arichiga. I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly.
I just call him Noe.
Noe, all right. And, you know, they're opening up a new place called The Hub, providing 26 beds for overnight stays, which is awesome and much, much needed. We also had, from the City of Palm Desert, Jason Austin, who talked about all the different partnerships that the City of Palm Desert is forming to address or has formed to address homelessness across all levels of government. Now, all these presentations were important and they were great to hear. And I think people felt overall good about what's going on. But I'll tell you, the kicker, the moment in which everyone felt this is what it's all about, is when we heard testimony from two individuals specifically. Jennifer Palomares, who was once homeless and now works at the Coachella Rescue Mission, and Joseph Parker, who was once homeless, and he's a veteran and lives at the Veterans Village in Cathedral City now. They gave great testimony as to what their challenges were, how they ended up homeless, what they went through while being homeless, and then all the great people they met along the way in order for them to get to a better place in their lives and now giving back to their communities. I thought that was, people just really enjoyed what they had to say, and I think some folks got emotional over their words. Overall, I'll tell you, and then afterwards, sorry, I forgot to mention that we had a roundtable discussion as well, where there was a lot of back and forth between individuals that were there to discuss, you know, challenges, lessons learned, what's next, things of that nature. So all that is to say, folks, and I'll turn it over to Greg, is that I'm really proud of what we've been able to do. We've come a long way. Knowing that at one point in time, we were at each other's throats. And knowing that at one point in time, cities were blaming other cities. Potential lawsuits between cities and the county. And now, and quite frankly, even nonprofits fighting for limited resources. Now there seems to be a great synergy. Obviously, there's challenges. Obviously, there's concerns. But I'll tell you, not like it was before. So with that, Greg, if you don't mind, I'll turn it over to you, and then we'll also hear from Tom.
Pretty much took everything that I was going to say.
You got all the specific questions.
As the supervisor said, I was there with him from the beginning, you all know that, and it is amazing how far we've come, but more importantly, how much of an example we've been for the rest of the county on what regional approaches to take. What best practices we put in place. And you see those regional efforts happening now in the southwest part of the county, between Corona and Orco. Riverside, of course, is its own beast in a good way. And then actually the efforts within the past area in Pimenton Sandy Central. And again, you'll hear that from Housing Workforce Solutions staff, as well as individual elected officials throughout the county, that the Coachella Valley has really been a model for that. I want to expand a little bit on the point in time count. As the supervisor said, we decided to go every other year, which is allowable under HUD. As most of you know, it's an extremely expensive endeavor to do. It's about a $400,000 commitment from the county, and that doesn't even include the time commitment and cost to your city departments, as well as law enforcement agencies that aren't paid through the county. We decided that not only, to the supervisor's point, to look at where we've come from, where we're going, but more importantly, we use those resources to continue to provide services and house residents. As the supervisor said, we have upgraded our homeless management information system over the last 3 years to really dive into deep demographics on our homeless and unhoused population. But more importantly, we're continuing that count on a daily basis. So, for example, countywide in 2023, the point in time count was 3,725. In that same period, we served over 17,000 unique individuals throughout the county, over 5,000 of those in the 4th District alone. So we feel that we're actually doing a better job of tracking than what the federal government requires us to do. The supervisor went over the number of housing placements, which has increased year over year. As he said, over 1,600 units in production in the Coachella Valley alone. Keep in mind, just about 4 years ago, there was an average of 39 units a year in production. So we've accelerated that production by a significant amount. I think it's also important to note here too, and this will be in relation to the Navigation Center as well, but when we talk about the investments that we've done in housing, direct allocations from the supervisor's office through ARPA dollars, direct allocations from the county, allocations in our housing and homeless incentive program through our health plans, IDHP and Molina, one-time money. And so what we did as a county, and at the direction of the Board of Supervisors, were very deliberate in not creating new programming that we couldn't sustain over the years, but really invested in what I call capital infrastructure for both homeless services, but more importantly, housing. We're doing an amazing job in this county, especially in the Coachella Valley, about outreach, about case management, about transitional housing. Where we lack that throughput, though, is in that affordable housing. I know I'm speaking to the choir in this room. Every single city right now is focused on affordable housing, which, again, is far better than any other district, actually, in the county. And not to say they're not trying, but we're just a little bit more ahead and a little biased from them. The supervisor pointed out the kind of the programming that we did. I want to highlight the Navigation Center a little bit more from the City of Palm Springs. I actually was just out there to do a media preview today with KASQ, and I purposely have not driven by there because I didn't want to see it till actually one phase was done. So we actually toured the first phase, which is the early entry center, which will have 55 shelter beds today. It's absolutely beautiful. It's amazing what they've done with what was basically just a tin shell. Before that, that's planning to open on March 4th. It is not a drop-in, drop-out facility. Actually, individuals will check in at the Access Center across from the airport. That's been operating for almost 3 years now. And then Martha's will actually transport them to that center in the early evening and then transport them back in the morning. Full-on case management with those individuals. They're not just sleeping like we had in New York Roy's, so we learned our lesson at that point. Right now, we're finalizing the construction and capital improvements on the larger building, which will have all the wraparound services, respite care, the commercial kitchen with a workforce component, and actually 5 of the 80 transitional units were actually brought in today and will be starting in place tomorrow. What all of us commented on today is not only how, actually relatively speaking, quick this has gone for a public project, but really, this is a model, and it's already being looked at by the state as a model and some national organizations about a real continuum of services. It's basically a four-step process, and I love how the city has spelled this out about the Access Center, which is immediate access at the Access Center across from the airport, but then it has the element of the early entry, which is the shelter bed component. And then the transitional units, 80 of those, servicing probably about 120 to 30 people because some of those will be for families or couples. We've also set aside 5 of those units for transitional age youth, 18 to 24, which is actually a very huge need in the Valley. And then the fourth stage is the permanent housing. So again, as Palm Springs opens 3 new developments, Monarch actually just opened this last week. We talked about that throughput and that'll be there. So we're really excited. The whole Navigation campus should be open by the end of July or first part of August. I also want to highlight, too, that this has been actually an amazing example of the county-city partnership. As the supervisor said, it's a very different relationship than it was 6 to 7 years ago. But it really has shown how well the county and the city have been able to work together. That's another model that other cities within the county are noticing as well. And they're realizing, too, that they have to step up in order to have some skin in the game, too. We highlighted, as the supervisor pointed out, basically 3 of the cities in the Valley, but we made clear at the symposium, and I want to get clear here, is that it's all of the cities within the Valley that play a partnership. We all know that you contribute to the CD Housing First program. We all know that in your own ways, you're trying, whether it's partnerships with law enforcement, whether it's even Cathedral City that's trying to work on a home key project that seems to stall thanks to the state. But that's what's important to notice. It's really is a collective effort throughout the Valley. Other than that, I'll just highlight too that the testimonials were the most powerful. I even joked that if you weren't crying, something was wrong with you. And to the supervisor's point on the roundtable that we had again, what I found really interesting is even 4 or 5 years ago, it would have been a complete bitch session, for lack of a better word, about what we're not doing right, what's going wrong. That was not the case in this. It was really touting not only what the county has done, what the cities have done, but what our service providers have done. And to the supervisor's point, 7 years ago when he got into office, there was so much fracturation or siloing amongst even our nonprofits that basically at Turf War or we're fighting for the same resources, But what we've been able to do as a region, and again across the county, is really take down those silos, is really leverage and have people work together. Some people are very good at one aspect of what they do, some at others. And so how do we leverage those types of resources? So that's a little bit more in depth. And I know we have a little snippet of the video from the veteran. So.
Yes. While we're pulling that up, and Sharon, I recognize we're going a little long here. And before I turn it over to Ivan to talk about our actual quarterly report, to the supervisor and Greg's point, the testimonials were incredibly powerful. And one of them was Joseph, who is our client. He spoke for about, I shouldn't say spoke, he preached for about 10 to 15 minutes. And he didn't know what he was going to say. And if you watch it, we just have a little clip of it, and Joseph is kind of wrapping up his story with us. When we met him, he was just about done with life, and he said as much, and he was looking for a sign and a place, so we will play quick.
Also, was a great bus that was parked to the left, and I ignored it, and this bus said, go and talk to him. And then I said, it's a Mexican guy there, you don't know nothing about all this, you know? He's sitting down there with water bottles and... You know, and then I looked over there and said something about homeless vets. I said, hey, that's me. So I walked over and I saw this gentleman. This man changed my whole life. You don't have a clue. That Mexican brother changed my life. And there he is. I want to ask him to stand. Company, they believed in me. They were notorious. They was on me like white on rice. I mean, this brother went out his way. He took me to find me. I mean, he got in his car. We rode around. He's trying to find me a place to stay for my daughter. And he put me up in a place. And he told me about Veteran Village in Cathedral City. And then that was a process, I'll tell you.
So, Chair, unless you defer to you if you want to pause here, otherwise, we are ready to present our end of year numbers as well. Thank you.
Okay. Unless we have other comments we want to get into now, let's go ahead.
Good evening, Chair. Good evening, members of the committee. That speech was really pretty powerful. So I just wanted to quickly highlight some of the report that we just gave in for Q4, wrapping up our year. But before we get into that, I just kind of want to go over the numbers real quick. I know you've seen these a few different times, but just kind of highlight where we're at today, actually for the end of last year. So the first year, I think we had, we started with a list of 200 names. And at the end of year 2021, we initially had mentioned that we had House 75. Earlier this year, I had went through some of the data, and I ended up finding there were a few errors. And so we've adjusted those errors, and we now mentioned in our staff report that we've actually housed 72. So still a good number, but we wanted to make that correction for all of you. At the end of the year, we went back to all of your cities, worked with your law enforcement, you know, your any city staff, the sheriff's department for some cities, and all the police officers, and said, let's revise the list, let's reset it, and go back to 200 names, and let's start working with a new set of people. And then at the end of 2022, we housed an additional 54. And then we went through the same process again, went back with all your city staff, code enforcement, law enforcement. And 2023, we had a lot of people housing an additional 65. Last year, for sure, was probably our most challenging year. I think in, at the end of summer, I think we only housed 7 people, and it was our first single-digit quarter in the program's history. So there were some challenges, and out of 65, we only ended up housing... ...58. That number would have been a little bit higher, but some of the challenges that we ran into had to do more so with voucher vacancies or voucher availability, more so with, you know, rent costs that are associated with some of those challenges. and then unit availability. But towards the tail end of last year, we did have a few setbacks, not so much with this, but so much with our clients who didn't want to leave the Valley. The majority of our clients all of last year, a good amount of them all left the Valley. And so there was some hesitancy in wanting to uproot their entire lives, you know, being here in the Valley all their life. And so it was a bit scary for them to leave. And so last minute, they chose not to.
Ivan, just to clarify, when we say left the Valley, we found housing for them outside of the Valley.
Correct.
So for those that, whose constituents say they are all coming here, we have to remind ourselves sometimes we send them there. And by there, in this case, was downtown Riverside. Correct.
Yes, thank you. And then, of course, moving forward, those are still going to be some of the challenges. I know I mentioned at the last homeless community meeting that we were seeing less vouchers throughout the year. So that is going to be a challenge. I know committee member Rodriguez mentioned at the last meeting that there is a kind of a ramp up happening in more project-based sites. So there are going to be more vouchers online as time goes on. But we're still going to face that challenge with some of our clients wanting to leave the Valley to go out of town. So that, again, moving forward, that's going to be a challenge. And as of year-to-date position, with this quarter not even ending, we're already at 13. So of those 13, I believe 5 or 6 of them have already left the Valley. So that's a good amount of people leaving. And with that, I end my presentation. If there's any questions.
Any questions?
Let me just say, Yvonne, thank you for your good work as well. Many times we come and go and we don't acknowledge or appreciate or value the work that one does until we hear from somebody else. And I'll tell you, you were finally appropriately recognized for that one individual that you helped, Joseph, in front of a couple hundred people, which was very much, I think, the right thing to do, and just say thank you.
I just wanted to make a couple comments. I want to thank everybody for everything you're doing in this realm. 17 years ago, when I first started on City Council, one of the first meetings I was dragged to was on homelessness, and it was on this idea of a regional center being built in the Western Valley. We know that the Eastern Valley's taken care of a lot of the issues for a long time. So when Roy's Resource Center was opened, it was a great idea. Maybe location and maybe recession, who knows what the reasons were that it didn't work, but it's turned into something even better. The county has programmed it. But with Palm Springs coming online and the help that the county and Greg, thank you for all your assistance and supervisor, with Desert Hot Springs, we've produced a smaller version of what a navigation center will be. Funding's always going to be hard. We invite anybody to come up and take a look. If you're looking to do something in your city, what we've done in ours is a smaller scale. $400,000 the county is putting towards ours is going to help for a short period of time. Unfortunately, it's going to cost us about $1 million a year to run this, and we're going to be looking for funding as everybody else is. But if we all do our parts and we're able to put people into housing at the end, it's going to be a positive for everybody. We have a supermajority on my council that supports this idea, and we understand that, as Tom said, sometimes they go out, sometimes they come in. Anyone coming to my city is most likely looking for a bed. They're not looking for a place to escape from. So I want everybody to remember that when it comes to navigational centers and these other places, if people need to go somewhere, let's support that and get them the help they need. So thank you for everything you guys are doing.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any comments?
Question, Chair.
Yes.
I don't know if the supervisor or maybe Greg can answer this. First of all, I appreciate all the work that's going on. If you go to other communities and other counties and regions, by far there's a lot of great work being done here, and you see it out there. My question would be more to the chronic homeless individuals we've seen. Has there been an update with the Care Court and the other side of the county?
Yeah, great question. I'll defer to him.
So Care Corp was great in concept. There's no teeth to Care Corp. We have so far probably had about 50 individuals that have been referred to Care Corp. Many of them don't, so they're primarily referred mostly through family members. a few through the DA's office, but most of them will not take part in a session. So it's not the panacea that everybody thought it was going to be, and the overwhelming number of those individuals are not homeless. They actually are housed. So what we've done as far as addressing chronic homelessness, and again, as you know, Councilor, is they're the hardest actually to, and Ivan will attest to this too, they're the hardest to get engaged. They take the most touches. You know, we average in the county 57 touches just to get somebody engaged. What we started as a pilot project is through an integrated service delivery type model in the city of Riverside that basically is the mirror of what the CB200 program. That's been going on. It'll be a year in June, and we've housed about 20 people. So it has relatively roughly the same success rate just because of the type of individuals. You are seeing there were some changes in conservatorship law that may help, but it's still not going to solve the problem. There are some pieces of legislation, again, to even increase or decrease actually the standards for conservatorship. I think one really important thing, and the board has approved this, so I'm comfortable as a department person saying, is the support of Proposition 1. It's not the perfect piece of legislation. But it does have the bond measure in it that will actually provide resources for housing, especially for those that have mental health issues. There's also the potential in there for the county to take some funds for the replacement of our behavioral health hospital, which is desperately needed. So I think that's one tool. We still continue to look for ways, but it is the most challenging group of individuals that we deal with.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any questions or comments? We don't need a vote on this.
You really don't. It's just to receive and file. It's already been received, and we could file it.
Thank you very much. We're going to move to item D, which is establish qualified professional services vendor list. Randy.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the Executive Committee. CBAG, as you all know, hires professional service vendors to do a variety of, perform a variety of services for CBAG, including our big projects, the CB Link and CB Sync, also newer projects, the Arts and Music Light, at least new to me, our broadband strategic plan, and the Blowsand project. In addition to these larger projects, CBAG regularly contracts for professional services from everything from assistance with grant writing, assistance with outreach and communications to professional engineering of a very specific nature. We would like to move from the Pee Wee Leagues, boy, this is a bad joke, to the professional leagues when it comes to contracting with professional service providers. I will keep my day job. The services that I previously mentioned are those that can pop up from time to time. Grants come and go. Sometimes grant opportunities come with a very tight timeline. We would like to be more nimble as professional athletes tend to be. So what we have done is conducted a procurement asking for statements of qualifications from the professional service community for 18 different disciplines, everything from grant writing, as I said, to professional engineering of many different flavors, to outreach. We advertised a request for qualifications last December, and we held open the RFQ for some time. In January, we received 42 statements of qualifications from vendors offering a variety of services types for firm. Some offered all 18 professional service categories. Some of them offered just one. We reviewed the statements of qualifications. All met our minimum thresholds for quality and content, and all disciplines that we requested proposals for were satisfied with the statement of qualifications list that we received. So we're here tonight before you to request your concurrence and authorization to enact a qualified vendor list that has these 42 initial members of the qualified vendor list. But this is not a one and done. We know that vendors change. Key staff members come and go. Vendors actually do change their profile services that they provide. So we're proposing, in addition to requesting the authorization to establish a qualified vendor list, that we are enabled to modify, update, and manage the list on an annual basis, where our executive director could receive additional statements of qualifications throughout the year. And every year we would come back to the executive committee, ratify those additions to the list, with the expectation that this will allow us to, again, conduct procurement of professional services in a professional way, a transparent way, but also in a more nimble and more efficient manner. So the recommendation before you tonight is twofold: to establish the qualified vendor list with a three-year freshness date on it, and also authorize the executive director to receive and approve additional qualified submissions from vendors throughout each year, throughout the 3 year term of the qualified vendor list, and also negotiate and execute contracts up to $50,000 in value. The current procurement policy and procedures for CBAG allows the executive director expenditure authority up to $50,000 per project, as well as for capital expenditures, and $25,000 for non-capital expenditures. And we're recommending across the board to just level set that cap at $50,000. And I would like to add also that as a part of this effort to conduct this pilot effort to streamline our procurement process, we did find, I think, some opportunities to update our procurement policy and procedures. It is 3 years old, and we would like to come back to this committee with some recommended improvements, updates to some aspects of the policy and procedures at a future date, and we're targeting April for the next executive committee meeting. Happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you for your time.
Any questions?
Move approval.
Second.
Any questions?
Moved by Coachella, second by Rasmarowicz.
Sure. Of the submissions, do they include everybody we've been using in CBAG? And is there any contracted vendor we've used that didn't submit, and are we encouraging them to submit? Or is there anybody that we've dropped off the list?
Yeah, the answer is yes to both of those questions. That we cast a very wide net. I think we sent out an email to at least 100 vendors, and we got 42 responses. So some vendors did not respond for whatever reason. Some said they were too busy. Some were not interested. There were vendors that we have contracted with in the past that did not submit. We contacted them. We've asked them why. And some cases, they just missed it. And in those cases, I think this opportunity for the executive director to receive supplemental submissions of statements of qualifications will help address that, because there are vendors we have worked with in the past that are qualified and provide quality products, and we certainly would like to have that opportunity to work with them.
Are we weeding any out?
No. None of the 42 SOQs that we received did not meet the minimum qualifications or the minimum thresholds for quality.
So is the intent to just have a mass of contracts in case we need them? And that's part of what we're recommending Tom to be able to execute, versus going out to bid on as needed for certain pieces. And if the 50,000 is capital, there's still a lot of non-capital that are part of capital projects that are around that threshold.
There are no contracts that we're entering into with this action tonight. This reduces the amount of time it takes to get proposals, detailed proposals from consultants. So there will be a next step that, with approval of this qualified vendor list, we can go out to those five vendors that submitted calls for, say, grant writing assistance, and ask them for proposals, and then choose the best one of that bunch. But this will shorten the amount of time it takes to get those proposals in and get them into contract.
And then with the increase of the 50,000 across the board, what would the process be? I know right now there's a quarterly report that will indicate what you've executed for 25,000 or less. From a budget standpoint, that's a bigger number with a bigger list. Will that be the same type of process that can add up quickly? No offense to your ability to choose on.
Yes, we could certainly provide a report on any contracts that have been executed. And I don't want to lose sight. This may be used more often than not for contracts over $50,000 and would come through the committee process to approve. It just shortens the upfront time of having a wide net to everybody. We might be able to pre-select somebody for a $500,000 contract that ultimately you would see.
And so will a policy be coming back that changes the 25 to 50, because that's in there now?
Yeah, this would change the policy. And as Randy indicated, we plan on bringing the entire procurement policy back, and it would incorporate this one change and make other suggested changes as well, including probably changes to some of the other amounts, given how much more expensive things are today than they were just 3 years ago.
Thank you.
Any other questions? We do have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Joey?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Item passes. Our next item is number 9. It's informational. Those who like. Item number 10 is legislative updates. Martinez. The legislative items. I don't know if it's an update.
Sure, I'll be brief and provide you a quick legislative update, given that we're still in the beginning parts of the legislative session for this legislative year. One of the major topics we're paying close attention to is the state budget. It was reported earlier in January there was a $68 billion deficit. Per the Senate's office report, that was in stark contrast to the governor's estimate, $38 billion. And so those two numbers are getting reconciled in the budget process. We're keeping a close eye on that. But the latest news on the budget is that there was a more recent LAO report that just came out, and now sets the number at $73 billion. So we are keeping a very close eye on that over the next 2 months as budget hearings ensue. And get into the May revise, we're also going to be paying close attention to the spring Department of Finance letters that start coming out and give an indication of where the governor will be on the budget. But as it relates to transportation, the CTC did have a number of hearings related to SB 1121 workshops. The purpose of SB 1121 is for the CTC to come up with a plan on costs and revenue needed for projects and programs. Those include the ATP program, the local partnership program, the trade corridor enhancement program, and also other programs that are part of SB1.
Thank you.
We are in our lobbyist group, just keeping a close eye on that for us up in Sacramento, and is engaged in the conversation is providing us periodic updates on that. One of the things we did do during December and January was we took the opportunity to meet with our delegation of representatives, both at the state and the federal level. We have met with all, that's Congressman Reese, Senator Garcia, Senator Wallace, and we did earlier, given the work on Indicating, did have a number of meetings also with King Cover. The one that we are have yet to meet with our executive director is Senator Padilla, and that is in the works. So we are doing that work just to give our representatives an upshot on programs and priorities for CMEG, and also to learn what their priorities are for this legislative year. On the state side, I just want to note some leadership changes. In the Senate side, Senator Mike McGuire took over the position of Senate Pro Tem after a long-term Tony Atkins stepped down, so that is a major change there. And so we're keeping an eye on leadership changes at the committee level. So we'll report back on changes that may impact us or those committees. But A very important change for us on the assembly side on the transportation committee is Lori Wilson now replaces Laura Freeman. As you recall, the last few years we came back on a number of bills that were problematic for CBAC, AB 6 and AB 7, to mention two bills that were carried by Assemblymember Laura Freeman. Those bills, AB 6 and 7, are still in play, but she's no longer in the powerful position as committee chair. So what we do know is that Laura Freeman is a more moderate member. She comes from a background in private affordable housing builder, and she has made some comments that allude to not brushing the statewide with a broad stroke and applying a statewide program that applies to all counties and rather more regional approaches to how we fund transportation projects. So more to come on that. February 16th was the deadline for legislative bills to be introduced. In the 23-24 cycle, we're at over 5,000 bills. As you can tell, our lobbyist is tasked with going through those. We do have some important bills here that we kind of highlighted for you so far at the time this report was written. But we since learned of other new bills that are coming forward, and we'll be reporting back to you at the next committee meeting. And being waiting, we'll also be weighed in on some as well that could be problematic or beneficial to us. I think one of the on the environmental side.
Before you go there, Matt, just to clarify, I think you said Laura Friedman's the more moderate on transportation. I think you meant Lori Wilson.
Lori Wilson.
The new
one.
Yes, the new one.
I just didn't want any of you repeating that, otherwise people will look at you like you don't know your politics in Sacramento. Sure.
That was Lori Wilson, more moderate.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. So there are a number of bond bills we're keeping a close eye on as well. Dora Garcia has one in the assembly that's been worked on by environmental groups as well. There is some funding for Salt and Sea. And on the funding side related to Salt and Sea, that is one program, the Salt and Sea Management Program. Didn't propose to get cut by the governor, so we'll be working on a support letter. There is a hearing coming up in the next couple weeks that's solely on the Salt and Sea, so we'll make sure we get that letter in on time to support funding for the Salt and Sea as well. So those are some highlights on the budget. We did also have for you, and it's in the agenda packet, a letter on the REAP programs. There's about $19.4 million that are proposed to come in the Coachella Valley because of the budget situation. ACD has notified that they are going to be only allocating half of those funds until the budget issues get resolved. So we do have a letter in the packet for our chair to sign to protect those monies in this budget cycle. So again, those are some of the highlights that are going on legislatively. Happy to answer any questions you have.
Just kind of a question here. As the state starts to face austerity and different cuts that are happening there, the Fed still has a lot of money. And I know there's at the Department of Transportation, U.S. Department of Transportation, there's a number of different funding sources, rural opportunities, how to use transportation for economic success. It's called the Routes Program, the Reconnecting Communities and Neighborhood Grants Program, the Federal Interagency Thriving Communities Network, and the Safe Routes and Roads for All. So there's a lot of money at the Fed. It's just it's a matter of understanding how those programs work and connecting ourselves to the appropriate officials. So I think I think we're at a good point right now where, you know, the state might, it's going to face a lot of austerity, and we might want to shift a little bit and try to talk to some members that can do some things.
We'll follow up with you on that, and if anybody else has grant opportunities you know about, we'd love to work with your city, tribe, or county to get more money into the desert.
Any other questions or comments? Thanks, sir. All right, so we're going to go to item number 11, public comments on non-agendized items. Anyone?
Yeah,
thank you. 12 is announcements. Our next executive committee will be held on April 29th at 4:30 p.m. here. So you get a month off. And then before we go to closed session, we're just going to announce that we have two items on the closed session. One is conference with labor negotiator and conference with real property negotiator. We'll take a couple minutes and clear the room, and we'll go to item number one in a few minutes. We are going to formally adjourn the meeting. No reportable action for closed session. We are adjourned.